Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass is the sign for the weekend wrap, surveying the squared circle. Well, got a lot to talk about tonight. Had the fight of the year last night, at least as far as anticipation. We're going to talk about the results of that fight with our different members of our panel, Mr. Scully. We're going to have Ms. Melissa Smith joining us tonight, as well as the champ himself, Mr. Raymond Brucia. So let's get on with the show here. I'm going to grab Mr. Scully, bring him in on the current conversation. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on with his fighter and his take on the weekend action. We also had David Lemieux make a very short work of Mr. O'Sullivan. So we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening up there on the Canadian boxing scene. And, hey, we're going to have a great show, as usual, every Sunday. So sit back, relax. If you want to make a comment, you can call in 718-506-1506. And by the way, if you're looking to have a great cup of coffee, check out the Champions Brew. There's a website, www.thechampionsbrew. You can check it out. Check out his coffee, and the sales of the coffee go to some very great charities. But right now we're going to talk with Mr. Scully. Scully, how you doing this evening?
I'm good. How you doing?
Oh, man. Still a little bit perturbed about last night's decision, but I guess we'll talk about that a little bit later. I mean, you did see some other good fights this weekend. Were you able to get around and watch any of those? I know you're part of the training camp too, also, aren't you?
Right, but yeah, I was able to watch it on the internet. So I caught it.
Did you happen to catch Mr. Lemieux's performance?
Yeah, he because he trains in the same gym that I'm at, and the same coach.
That's why I was asking you.
Right, and he, that's one thing. I mean, David has always had that power, and, you know, even as an amateur, that was his thing, and he's mean. I'll tell you, like, I don't know if you guys ever picked up on it, you know, he's a mean kid. Like, when he fights, like, he wants to kill you. Like, he really, like, if he could separate your head from your shoulders, he'll do it. And, so he always is going to bring that level of excitement to any fight at 160 or 68 or wherever he wants to fight at. He's always going to be a problem, and he's a threat, you know, and that's for Canelo and Triple G and any of them.
Well, I'm kind of glad you mentioned that, because I'm going to go there eventually, but since you mentioned it, there have been times when they've talked about David and Triple G or Canelo providing who won that the fight last night. What do you think now that we have Canelo with two of the belts?
You know, it's like I say, David has that power, so he's always going to be a threat. He's gonna go for it. He's gonna try. and he's going to land something. So we'll see. I mean, obviously, you know, Canelo is a much more well-rounded technician, and you know, and Canelo really, you know, he surprised me a little bit in the first Triple G fight with his defense and his, you know, really subtle counterpunching. But last night he did it. He did it again. You know, I didn't know if he. I had my doubts if he'd be able to match that zone he was in, that performance. But last night, you know, he definitely he exposed Triple G. You know, I shouldn't have say exposed. I mean, I think he may have exposed that Triple G is aging, and that he, you know, and the first signs we saw of that probably in the Danny Jacobs fight. You know, but I think it's pretty clear that Triple G is not quite what he was 2-3 years ago.
Well, I mean, don't you think that was part of the strategy?
What's that? What do you mean?
Him getting older. I mean, you know, that's what we were talking about. You know, even the first fight, you know, about the age and about you know, how Triple G was starting to look a little slower and his power not be as devastating. And then we had
right.
the Canelo fight, which everybody, you know, well, not everybody, but I thought that Triple G actually won, even though it was a draw.
Right.
Last night, you know, I noticed the rust on Triple G. But, you know, once again, my personal opinion, I thought either Triple G won or it was another draw. It was that close.
Right. Oh yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. Like he Triple G, you know, he still looks formidable, and there could certainly be a great case for him winning last night, but like I said, what I see in him is body language that he never showed before. He was always like a stone face predator all the time, and now I notice in the last couple fights, but especially last night, he showed signs of, you know, even the announcers mentioned it several times, like how tired he looked and how hesitant he had become. You know, he was forced to wait a little bit at certain times in the fight. You know, I think he wasn't, like Roy said, he wasn't used to somebody going right to him and backing him up. But also, you have to take into account his age. Like, Canelo probably wouldn't have felt comfortable doing that 3 or 4 years ago. You know, he waited till he got older to implement that particular strategy, which is obviously smart on his behalf.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, the first fight was the blueprint. I mean, he could see you know, when he was coming forward that, you know, Triple G was not as effective, and now
yeah.
You're getting 2 years later when he's even older, and you know. But I kind of thought that Triple G went in as the underdog. As a matter of fact, I believe Vegas had made him the underdog the day before the fight. But I thought Triple G was kind of in a position where he had to take the fight to Canelo, and he had to look kind of exceptional, for lack of another word, in order for him to beat Triple G, instead of, you know, we usually see it the other way around with the champion.
Right.
Do you think that Triple G was at a disadvantage as far as the crowd, and as far as the atmosphere for the fight?
Right. Well, let's do this. Let's say it for what it is. Like, he was at a disadvantage because of Oscar. You know, like, he, and there was people I respect in the game who alluded to that in the, you know, in the last 3 or 4 days. They were saying, one guy was like, listen, you don't really think Oscar's going to let Triple G win a close fight, do you? And, you know, I mean, that there's something to be said for that. I mean, Oscar's there, and, you know, he's got the whole Canelo thing, and the, you know, the Hispanic boxing fans are so, you know, feverish, and, you know, I mean, a lot of people alluded to, a close fight, no way Triple G gets it. And last night it was a very close fight, and Triple G didn't get it. So we can make our own implications and assumptions based on that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. But we did have some good action, though, otherwise.
Oh, great. Oh, man, it was a tremendous fight. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that some of the other fights were entertaining. I mean, you know, of course, they weren't anything like Triple G and Canelo. But I did see a young man that I thought has performed exceptionally well. And I don't know if he actually gets the accolades that he should. But I'm talking about, Mr. Montoya. What did you think about his performance?
Actually, the only fights I was able to watch was David and Canelo. I didn't see any of the other fights at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Mr. Montoya at all?
Not that well, no, to be honest with you, not that well. But I, you know, I did hear, you know, about his performance last night. So he's, you know, that's the beautiful thing about these type of shows. You know, they show the first couple fights and the guys, you know, you never heard of them, but, you know, they're on there for a reason. And matter of fact, on that end, I'll tell you what, the first time I saw Canelo, I didn't even know who he was. I thought he was an Irish kid. He was on a pay-per-view undercard. It must have been a Mayweather fight. He fought, I believe it was Miguel Cotto's brother, if I'm not mistaken. It was Miguel Cotto's brother. Now, this was back around 2009. So, you know, obviously the people in boxing knew this kid had a future. So they put him as one of the, I think he was the first pay-per-view fight on one of those shows. As a matter of fact, you know what I think it was? I think it was Pacquiao and Joshua Calati. I'm pretty sure it was that one. And Canelo was on the undercard. So, you know, when they put these guys on those undercard slots, you know, everybody wants to be on those one of those TV spots. So when the promoter picks a certain guy, it's for a reason. Like, this is someone they're looking 4, 5, 6, 7 years down the road is going to be a big, big, big star. So obviously Oscar has that thought in mind for this kid.
I'm kind of glad you mentioned it. You mentioned Pacquiao. I'm sure it was kind of, you know, inadvertently, but okay. Yeah. Here we go again. Floyd. Floyd. And
I want to.
Yeah.
I want to tell all the boxing fans listening: do not pay for this fight. Do not watch this fight. You are a sucker if you pay for this fight. I mean, come on, man. This is, you know, and I'm amazed that, like, Floyd, you know, he's in a position where he could say anything. He could say he wants to fight Wilder, and people will be like, yeah, that's going to be good. You know, I want to check this out. I mean, it's just insane. Like, and I was just, it's funny. I was telling a guy today, I said, listen, I didn't watch the first fight. I didn't pay to watch the first fight. I'm certainly not paying to watch the second fight. And I don't care about the second fight. Like, it's such a non, you know, nothing fight. It means nothing. If Mayweather and Pacquiao fight, that to me is for people who really don't know boxing. They like boxing, but they don't really know boxing. And they think, you know, it'd be like having, you know, Ali and Frazier fight in 1978 when it would mean zero. But people heard of Ali and Frazier, so they watch it. Like, it would be a big fight. And that's what this is. But I can't see real boxing people being into this fight. I mean, I hope it doesn't even happen. I mean, I hate to see people just robbed and give, you know, Floyd this, you know, he just like wants this money. I don't know why he wants more money, but he wants this money, and he's just willing to take it from people, you know. And I can't agree with it. I can't even watch it.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's so much Floyd. I mean, you know, Pacquiao's the one that needs the money, but, I mean, the fact that either one of them is even contemplating, you know, and like
right.
You said, you know, I mean, you know, people are thinking about even buying it. I mean, you know.
Right. I mean, you know, it's not right. Like, we're paying for, you know, you're, if I'm going to pay 80, which I've never, I don't know how many pay-per-views in my life I've paid for. I would say maybe two. You know, if anybody's going to pay $80 or $100 to watch a fight, you know, you know what I would pay? And I wouldn't pay, but if I was going to, I would pay to watch Spence and Keith Thurman for that kind of money. You know, that's the level of fight. But Pacquiao and Mayweather, like, there's no way I would be a fool. It would go every against everything I know about boxing to pay for that fight. I wouldn't. That's not for boxing people. That's for people who heard of Floyd and heard of Pacquiao and get caught up in it. Because I don't think real boxing people care at all about that fight, and they know what it is. And it doesn't have any impact. Certain fights have no impact on the division. At welterweight, say, it's not going to have any impact on the welterweight division because neither one of those guys is going to fight Errol Spence, you know. So it doesn't mean anything. It's just a way for them to make money. Nothing more. And they'll just about practically admit it that's why they're doing it, you know. And so I make it a point not to be a part of things like that.
Yeah, I hear you, Scully. But let's talk about some things that, you know, true boxing fans want to see, and I'm sure you want to see it also. We know we had Sean Porter come out victorious, and Errol Spence said that they'd like to fight each other after the fight. But, Scotty, you mentioned Errol Spence and Keith Thurman. I'm talking about Errol Spence and Sean Porter. We had a lot of guys call out Errol Spence. But, Scully, how many of these guys really want to fight Errol Spence Jr.?
Right. Well, you know what? At this point, fighting Errol Spence for those guys is a lot of risk and probably not a lot of reward. Because the fact is, I mean, we know, like, if you mention Errol Spence to you or to me, you know, we get excited. It's like, oh, yeah, this kid, he's awesome. If you mention Errol Spence to even casual boxing fans, they're not going to know who he is. Like, he doesn't command money like that. He's not at that level. Like, people can't differentiate sometimes skill level and worth. And the guy's a top fighter. He's a problem. And I'm sure if you ask Floyd Mayweather, you know, be honest, who wouldn't you want to fight? You know, I'm sure Errol would be on that list. But he doesn't have a name yet. He just doesn't. And he doesn't have any recognition factor whatsoever. So, you know, if these guys want to fight him, I have a feeling that a lot of these guys, maybe they want to fight him, but they would price themselves out. They wouldn't get the money that they think it's worth. And the fact is, they'd probably get more to fight Danny Garcia, Sean Porter, names like that. So, it's a tough spot. It's a lot of risk fighting Errol at this point. We're talking, you know, at this point, September 2018, it's a lot of risk, but not the reward probably that you're looking for.
Scalia, I mean, you know, now that we've had the big fight, the big event, Triple G and Canelo 2, are we gonna have to have a Canelo Triple G 3, or is this series over? Do you think it's, you know, maybe Triple G will hang up the gloves, or do you think he's still? You talk about Errol Spence, being a crowd attraction yet. Is Triple G really a crowd attraction without having a championship belt and against anybody else other than Canelo? Or, you know, I mean, I don't know if you could even sell a Triple G Keith Thurman fight, at his age, is he able to be a pay-per-view star, or a star able, you know, an older gentleman, you know, that's going to be able to attract the numbers that's going to need to keep him on you know, the boxing scene, or at least in the top 10.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, unfortunately, that's the you know, that's the way we are today. You know, that's the world we live in boxing. And you know, I'll give an example. Like back in the day, Ray Robinson, different guys, you know, they fought tune-up fights and fights to keep sharp. You know, even when they were pound for pound, they fought. I mean, look at Ray Robinson's record. He fought more stay busy fights than he did championship fights. You know, even Ali fought keep busy fights. He was very busy. Now in this era, I mean, Floyd Mayweather, probably his last 35 fights probably have been world championship fights. Like, they don't fight unless it's a big fight. So for Triple G, in a real boxing world, he'd come back maybe with a 10-round fight against somebody good, a tough guy, and, you know, maybe even Lemieux. And it would be a tough fight and get himself back in the mix. But guys like him will never do that. They will never fight a 10-round fight again. They will fight a world championship fight or no fight. And so, you know, right now he'd have to come back against Canelo, you know, unless he wanted to fight, you know, I don't know who the other champions are. It's so hard to keep track. I just think of Canelo. But, you know, that's an aspect of boxing that I don't agree with, because, you know, guys need to keep sharp and keep, you know, work. That's why some of these guys, I mean, you know, they fight twice a year. They're great fighters, but they only fight twice a year. You know, that's not conducive to staying sharp. But the problem is, Triple G could fight, you know, the number five contender to keep busy. But they're going to tell him, okay, but, you know, we're only going to give you $400,000, which is catastrophic money, huge money for anybody else. But for him, he'd consider that an insult, and he wouldn't do it. So, you know, we're really in a tough era where the big names, they only fight big fights. And so that's good for their bank account, but it's not good for their, you know, actual boxing prowess and how to keep sharp and tuned up. They don't do that. And that's a problem, you know, in my eyes as a trainer.
Yeah, I'm like you said, you know, the fight for $400,000 for him would be an insult. You know, I mean, you know, you talked about some of the guys, you know, even though they might be in the same weight class, you know, $400,000 would be a great payday for some of them. Triple D, no, not so much.
Right.
But it is interesting that you spoke about him with the possible matchup with Cotto. I mean, excuse me, with Lemieux. I'm kind of thinking about that. That might be a good way to go. Yeah. Speaking of you know, I mean, I'm always kind of talking about, you know, guys and how they, how people's perception of them also kind of lowers how they feel about our sport. We hear about Gervonta Davis. We saw all these guys at the Sean Porter fight. Gervonta was there. We saw Keith Thurman, the Charlo twins. I mean, it was a very extraordinary night. We had a lot of celebrities there. But then, of course, you know, we also had the knuckleheads after the fight. Gervonta Davis, professional fighter, gets in an allocation with some fan. Scully, I mean, at some point, when you become a champion, don't you have to hold yourself a little bit more accountable to the image that you portray? I mean, you know, we've had a lot of flashy champions. I mean, you spoke of Sugar Ray Robinson. you know, various others that, you know, have actually, you know, had their own personal problems and stuff. But very seldom did you hear about it in the news. These guys seem to use that as a badge of recognition. What do you think here, Scully?
I'm disillusioned. I'm disappointed. You know, you see, I'll tell you one thing. Like you saw, I don't know if you saw it, but after the fight, they had Javante Davis and a few other guys, Adrian Broner, and they're there talking, and it was very obvious. First of all, that Javante was drunk out of his mind. Like he really embarrassed. I don't know if he embarrassed himself, but he should have been embarrassed. And all I could think of myself is saying, man, could you imagine? And it would never happen, but could you imagine, like, at a fight, or and they're interviewing Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler, you know, these guys, and could you imagine them standing there being very disrespectful and loud and drunk and almost belligerent? Could you imagine that with these champions, with Larry Holmes, you know, with whoever? Alex Arguello, could you imagine that? Even think to imagine that as a bad joke. It would never happen. It would not happen in public like that. So I think, you know, I've always thought and I've always been taught and known that, you know, there's something different about being a champion. You know, there's the way you carry yourself. And it, like, it's not just winning a belt. That doesn't necessarily make you a champion, but the way you carry yourself. And I'll give you an example. And I told this story the other day. I was reading an autobiography one time, and Rocky Marciano said when he first was coming as a pro, he was in New York, he was training in New York, and him and his manager were walking, I guess, through Times Square, and they saw Willie Pep walking. And Rocky said to the manager, he said, let's follow him. Let's see what a champion does. Like, let's see how a champion, you know, carries himself. Let's watch him. And they followed Pep. I don't know how for long, you know, an hour or whatever it was, and they followed him around from, like, you know, 50 feet away or whatever, just to see how a champion would carry himself, what he does, how he dresses, you know, how he approaches people. And, you know, and it used to be where, you know, they said the heavyweight champion was the most famous athlete on the planet. It wasn't the soccer player, it wasn't the NFL's quarterback, it wasn't, you know, the center for the NBA champions. It was the heavyweight champion of the world. And we've gotten way, way, way away from that. Social media might be the best and the worst thing ever to happen to fighters. Like, you can get more famous and more recognition and more press, but people can also see what a fool you are sometimes, like what a fool you really are. And, you know, some of these guys should not be allowed near microphones. They should have people telling them. I mean, give an example. Did you see the video the other day of Adrian Broner in the Uber, in the car? Did you catch that?
Yeah.
You caught that. I know. Come on. That is like, you know, I mean, I'm willing to say, hey, maybe Adrian Broner's bipolar. Maybe he's schizophrenic. Maybe, I mean, something's not right with this guy. And he's got people around him. Obviously, they're egging him on, and they're saying it's okay, and they're a part of it. And this is not, I don't care what anybody says, this is not championship quality. This is not championship actions. And, you know, I don't know what we do about it, but apparently these guys don't have people behind them and with them to really illustrate this for them. And I think it's a problem. I think it's a big problem. You know, there's, I'd rather see an Andre Ward than an Adrian Broner on a television show. I'd rather introduce, if I have a young son and I have a choice, who I'm going to bring him around to visit at the gym to get advice from. You know, the choice, I'm going to go to Andre Ward before I go to Adrian Broner or Javante Davis.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, Scully, as always, man, we thank you for your time and your wisdom. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media, any events you have coming up, or any announcements you want to make?
Okay, well, listen, Twitter and Instagram, Iceman John Scully, and Facebook, John the Iceman Scully. But I'm actually going to be in Chicago, obviously, for Arthur's fight. Arthur Beterbiev is defending the title in Chicago on October 6th. So I'll be in town for that. And actually, I just talked to Wilfred Benitez's sister about an hour ago on the phone. I'm happy to report she says that the treatment he's receiving there is somewhat beneficial. I mean, he's not going to be like he was, but it's helpful. Whatever they're doing with him, it's helpful. They're going to be there for a while, so I'm actually going to be I have a glove that I just – I would actually like to urge your listeners to check on my Instagram and my Twitter so they can see this, see if they like this. I have a glove that was given to me by a fan that was signed by Leon Spinks and like three other guys. I forget who is still in the box, but and I'm going to have it next week, and I'm going to have Mark Breland, Junior Jones, Iron Barkley, Jerry Cooney, and Roberto Duran sign it, along with these other guys who have already signed it. And I'm going to sell it, auction it off on my pages, on my social media, and whoever wins the bid will get the glove, and I'm going to bring the money personally to Wilfred Benitez when I go to Chicago. So I urge everyone to check my social media and, you know, you could get an unbelievable piece of boxing memorabilia, but it would also go to an unbelievable cause. So I urge everyone to look into that.
Hey, Beth, thank you so much, Scully, and we look forward to talking to you again next week, my man.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Have a good night. All right.
You too. Yeah. Hey, as always, it's always good to talk to Scully, but I'm going to bring the professor in, Mr. Clemens. Jabron, how are we doing this evening, man?
I'm good, JK. What's going on?
Oh, nothing as usual, man. Good weather out here in Cali. Our lady authority, Miss Melissa Smith, she's in the queue. Melissa, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very well. So great to talk to you, JK.
We had the champ in the mix. Champ, what's going on tonight, champ?
Hey, what's going on, JK? How's everybody doing?
Oh, everybody's doing well. I'm going to put you right on Front Street, champ. I want everybody to know it's the wife's birthday, and we're going to give you the first thought this evening. I know it's not only her birthday, but you guys are all also celebrating years together. So why don't you give a nice shout out to the missus?
Hey, man, thank you so much. Yes, I definitely want to give a shout out to my lovely wife of 21 years, Mrs. Joanna Brewster. Today is her birthday, and we're celebrating, and this is also the time that it locks in the 21, it confirms the 21 years that we've been together. So, you know, it's just a beautiful thing, because it's like I never understood what marriage was. You know what I mean? Like, as a man, when you get married, it's like, you know, you get married and you have your mindset that this is what you think it's supposed to be. But what I come to understand is that, and I can only speak for myself, but I come to understand, you know, according to the Bible, you become one because she's everything that I am not, and she's everything that I want to be, and she keeps the foundation strong, that, like, regardless of how beautiful a house would be or my house would be in my mind, she is my foundation, and I just want to thank her for that. So thank you for allowing me to put that out there, because that's what every man, I feel, should strive for. You know, I tease it because she's from the South. I say she's my Ellie Mae.
Okay. Melissa, you want to have some remarks or comments for the chance?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
On, you know, 21 years, that's a beautiful thing. I've actually been, I'm coming up on 20 years with my husband in June. So I'm really, I understand what you're saying, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yes, ma'am. You know exactly what I'm saying. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you
yep.
so much.
Well, Professor?
You know he keeps the phone on mute, right?
I know. We'll get him in there in a minute. But, okay, everybody. Layman, I know your time is kind of limited tonight, but let's get everybody's view, first of all, of the big fight, Canelo, Triple G. As I mentioned, I thought it was a very close fight. I think it could have been another draw. Personally, I had Triple G winning this fight, but like the last one, it is what it is. We're going to start with the lady. Melissa, what did you think about the fight and the decision?
Well, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I gave the edge to Triple G. I just felt he was crisper. You know, the thing about it, and I was watching some of the highlights again today, they are both such remarkable boxers. And the way they fought was really, it was really a work of art. You know, it was sort of like, I don't know if you've ever seen those toys, those Rock'em Sock'em toys, but that's kind of what they looked like. And, you know, Triple G has that masterful jab. He was able to really move his body very, very well. But, you know, so much of what they were doing was this dance of parrying each other, of moving in and out, of a lot of missing, if you will, not in a huge way, but where they were both able to slip each other's punches very effectively and very smartly. But again, I my sense was it was Triple G, especially in the later rounds, he gained almost like a sixth sense of where Canelo was going to be and was able to, I thought, be just that little bit more effective. I wasn't necessarily miserable about the scoring. I probably would have preferred to see a draw rather than the Canelo win, but I didn't feel it was a robbery, which some people have stated. I didn't think that was the case. I do hope we see them box one more time. They're both exceptional fighters, and they really brought it to the ring in a way that I hadn't quite expected. Even though I've thought that Triple G had the edge, I was not at all disappointed. And more to the point, I think we both have to really just salute the incredible skill and stamina and heart of both of those fighters. They truly left it all in the ring.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I want to say that was wonderfully put. Wonderful. That was beautiful the way that you said that. And I have to tell you, that is the most impressive statement that I've ever heard a female speak about boxing, because what you did was you were able to see beyond punches or beyond two men that had muscles and were in shape. Bruce Lee referred to fighting as a small play, but played serious. And what I try to teach people when I'm training is your arms and your legs are paintbrushes. You're painting a picture for the people that have tuned in to watch around the world. It's your mind instructing your body on how to perform according to how it rehearsed through training. And so what we saw last night were two guys truly expressing themselves to the absolute fullest. Like, they captured in the heart and the mind of every man whoever wanted to be a warrior how a warrior should perform, how a warrior should look. One showed the true emotion of I want it as leading up to the press conference and whatnot. Then we had another who showed the look of I am the champ, I'm going to stay the champ, and when the bell rings, I'm going to show you why. So to me, it was an awesome fight on every level, with spiritual, mental, and physical, because in order for those two to perform like that, even in the 12th round, I mean, that's going to be one of my all-time favorite fights. I mean, I've seen great fights, don't get me wrong, but I'm definitely going to put this in that category because you can tell they both wanted it. The reason why I believe that Canelo was successful in winning the fight, and which, if you remember, JK, I said to you, I agree with you, I think Triple G is going to win the fight. I did not expect for Canelo to come into the fight and do what he did. I was expecting him to maybe be better than he was the last time, which was he boxed, he countered, he rolled, and I just kind of felt like I saw something at the end, like he was like, okay, man, you know, this, I've met my match, you know, so I thought a draw was fair. Now, this fight, don't get me wrong, it definitely could have been a draw, and I would have been okay with it. As a matter of fact, I'll go so far as to say, if you want to say if they would have gave it to Triple G, nobody could have contested that. But the fact is, I believe they gave it to the right man, and I'm a fair guy because I was a former champion, and I don't care if I don't like you, if I like you, if I don't like you, I'll never cheat you in boxing. That's why I would never hit a guy in the back of the head or after the bell. I would never do those things. The point is fair. I believe that Canelo did enough to win the fight. It was a close fight, but I really think he did enough. And again, I was all for Triple G. I really thought, because remember I said if he fights like the last fight, the fight before last night, I said he didn't really get started to about the third or fourth round. I said if he would have just started faster, and at the way Canelo was looking at the end of the fight, I said Triple G probably would have knocked him out in the second fight because he's not going to sit back and wait. But I think I won't say that he sat back and wait, but I think that what I would say was that what he did was he tried to break down Canelo with his jab. And he used his jab very effective. But here's the thing. When you are in a play, it is the movement. It is the vocal pitch of the person that is performing that you pay the most attention to. It could be something they say. It could be something they do. And in the case when we're adding, when we're comparing the two, when we compare what Triple G done in the beginning, yes, he used his jab marvelously. But what upstaged his jab was the movement, was the chances, was the speed, was the sharpness, was the harder punches that Canelo landed early, which if you're watching a play or if you're thinking of excitement, let's say a jab is a 22 bullet in terms of bullets. But then you got a 44 Magnum that's firing. It ain't firing as much as that 22, but it's firing enough to keep your attention where you're just as tuned in to that 44 Magnum that is not firing as much. But then you got this 22 just staying busy, and we know in boxing that's what you need. You need points to win. So what I'm trying to say is with the footwork, with the determination, with the movement, with the power, I think that in my mind, at least, Canelo was able to win over the crowd, which, as you know, everybody is a vibration. So the crowd, the vibration of the crowd, in some sense, has to be also impressing the judges that are sitting there, that is feeling this vibration that is taking place as this fight is going on in the arena. So, and then on top of that, they're being swayed and they're using their knowledge, their wisdom, But then when you get political about it, which I'm making the cake, when you get political about it, Canelo has more years in this sport as a fighter, realistically. Hanson Kidd, you know,
yeah,
I just feel...
I want to get into that political aspect next. After we talk about the physical part of the fight, because I thought that Triple G came in with a political disadvantage, and I'll explain that after we listen to the professor and his explanation of the fight.
Well, okay. Well, I just say, man, overall, looking at the whole picture, it would make more sense for Triple G to win this fight in a close fight because Canelo has a longer future, and he has a bigger fan base, at least in America, than Triple G at this point. You know, because with Canelo being a young, up and coming, well, he's not up and coming. He's actually a veteran at this point, but you know, he is more American. And then we get into the politics because this whole Russian thing, you know how, you know, so I'll just stop there. But that is my feeling on the fight. I just believe that Canelo, he just put on a better showing, and not to diminish or take anything from Triple G, because I was for Triple G going into the fight. And I've always been for Canelo, but after that first fight, it kind of swayed me to say, you know what, man, even though Canelo is my favorite of the two, I have to be honest with myself, and I have to say, well, I think in the second fight, based on what I saw the last fight, that Triple G was going to win. And that was my thought going, you know, all the way up until – I guess the first round, and I saw Canelo making those moves, man. I'm like, wow, and he took some hard punches. And, you know, people can't take punches from Triple G, but the fact that he took those punches and he stood there and he made him back up and he made him not be Triple G, you know. Last night he was like Double G. He went Triple G. But, yeah, man, so, you know, just having some fun with it. But, yeah, that's my analysis of the fight, and I definitely want to hear what the professor has to say.
Jabron?
Champ? What? That the fans, the vibe in the arena, the momentum went to Canelo because of what? Wait a minute.
All those Hispanics in there, man, you know
Wait
they were cheering for Triple G.
Wait a minute.
For Canelo.
Wait a minute. No.
Yes,
I'm going to tell you what was winning over the fans. Okay. Before I get into the technical aspect of this fight, let's just look at the narrative of Triple G, the champion, and the last fight. Okay, Triple G is undefeated champion. He's this monster. He's this killer, right? Abel Sanchez said Canelo ran the first fight. Oh, and Triple G said, oh, his punches was nothing. His power is nothing. Okay, so you have this guy that's the champion that has this stigma about him that he's this monster, this killer, right? And what happened was, oh, we want Canelo to fight Mexican style, right? So they fight Mexican style, and Triple G is not fighting this fight. Canelo came out from the first round, like I told you last week on the show, and what I predicted, he had confidence from the first fight because he was able to withstand Triple G's power. That's why the end of the first fight, you saw Canelo understanding trading with Triple G because he's gained confidence. You did not see Triple G get aggressive until after the seventh round when his own trainer told him, son, you're losing this fight. You're losing this fight. His own trainer told him he is losing this fight because he was on the back foot the whole first part of the fight. Not until that eighth round Triple G decided to try to come on when Canelo started to get a little fatigued. But Canelo showed his kahuna and said, I'm going to still stand here and fight with this guy. So I had it the same way the judges had it, 115-113. And not taking anything away from Triple G, he's a soldier, he's a champion, hardable champion. But my opinion, he didn't win that fight. Canelo won by the more powerful shot. And at the copy box numbers, Triple G only landed a couple of more punches than Canelo overall. He out-jabbed him. Of course he out-jabbed him. And something that a lot of casual fans don't take away from the fight is body punching. Once again, Triple G went away from body punching. He did not throw or land a lot of body punches where Canelo did. That's why you saw early as the fourth round, Triple G in his corner, huffing and puffing and trying to catch his breath in between rounds, all the way to the end of the fight.
I agree with you, man. I just want to jump in and say and add to that. Listen, everything you just said, I 100% agree. But let me tell you why I believe that Triple G was going to win this second fight, because in the last rounds of the first fight, Canelo was on his bike. And I was like, that's why I was saying earlier in the statements I was making, I said, Canelo, he seemed like he kind of like didn't want it enough in that last fight because he got on his bicycle. Like maybe he was tired or whatever. I don't even know what it was. So that's what told me. And then I said, okay, I'm thinking as a fighter, I'm saying, you know what? If I had to fight Canelo again, what would I do? I'll start early because I got the confidence now, whereas in the first fight, I kind of sat back more. So my thinking was he was going to do his homework, realize if he would have started faster, realize that Canelo was on his bicycle in the later rounds, if he would have started faster, then he could have won. But the fact that Canelo came out and fought the fight that he fought, I have to tell you, man, he gained more respect for me in this fight than all his fights combined, including Floyd, because I didn't know that he could do that. And it was impressive to me. He caught my attention, and that's why, like, I'm not no bandwagon jumper, because I was before any of y'all knew who he was when he was a little kid fighting in those little clubs down in Mexico. I was supporting him too because my boy Eddie Sanchez put me up on him long time ago before y'all even heard who he was. So, I've supported this dude his whole career. But this one fight, which was this fight on last night, after watching that first fight, I was thinking in a rematch, I thought that Triple G was going to come back and beat him, precisely, to be honest. But I'm so glad and I don't feel ashamed because I've always supported him, as I said, but I'm just so glad that he was able to really come back and prove me wrong. And I have no problem with saying that I was wrong. And I'm so happy for this dude. And I think that out of the two, if one was going to win, it should have been him because he's the younger of the two. Yes, Triple G is a great fighter. He's had a great career. He's still going to have a great career. But we're talking about a guy who's 6 years younger, and, you know, he's a great fighter. And I just say let him have his time. Just like every fighter before him, everybody deserves their time. And when you get to the point where you can be removed, then you should be removed, because the saying is out with the old and in with the new. And that's how we keep life going. Don't nobody sit on the top forever. Michael Jordan ain't the one that's sitting on the top anymore. You know, Kobe ain't sitting on the top anymore. You know, LeBron. You know, everybody gets replaced in life. And so, you know, Triple G's had his time, and maybe he'll still continue to have his time. But I'm saying he's 36 years old. He's had a great run. You know, I'm very happy to see Canelo and all the other up-and-coming champions. And I keep saying up-and-coming because he's not up-and-coming, but I'm just glad to see him in the position that he's in. For Mexico, for one, for all the hell that they've been going through.
Melissa, you want to comment on that?
Well, you know, I think it's an interesting perspective. Certainly, you know, Canelo, I mean, he's fought 50 professional fights, so it's not like he's just new out of the gate. But, yes, he is a longer guy. And Triple G, you know, he had a very different path to where he came from. He had a very huge, you know, as with many other Russian fighters or fighters out of the former Soviet Union, he had a very long amateur career before he ever went into the professional world. And, you know, kind of had to came out of that boxing style and had to adjust to a more American style. And certainly working with Abel Sanchez has been huge for him and has really given him a lot of opportunity. He's also tasted loss. But as you say, I mean, I think the point is well taken that he's 36 years old, and no matter what physical shape he's in, time marches on. You know, one of my sports heroes in the world is Nolan Ryan, who as a pitcher was able to pitch late into his 40s, in part because he had exceptional gifts and he also had exceptional mechanics. But as great a pitcher as he was, he still had to make adjustments from his fastball to a curveball and a breaking ball. And also as a pitcher, while he had the fastball, he had the strike record, he also had the base on balls record at the same time. So, you know, fighters make adjustments, and it was interesting to me that Triple G started out a little slow. I wasn't sure why that was, other than pacing to try to go, assuming that he was going to have the 12 rounds, seeing where he stood on that, you know, pas de deux, if you will, with Canelo, and how that was all going to work out, trying to fight at a certain pace and with a certain structure, and seeing what Canelo was going to do. I think part of it also with the whole way that the fight was delayed because of the steroid use and everything else, I think that may very well have gotten into Triple G's head somewhat. The press on it and some of the comments that came out around that time were unpleasant. And I don't know that he ever, when you talk about the psychological aspect of how a fight plays out, I don't know if that was somewhere in his mind, some that without the PEDs use, Canelo might be a slightly different fighter. Hard to know. All I can say is that I continue to say that it was extraordinarily exciting, represented boxing at its best. And as someone who has the opportunity to watch people at their peak, where just as in any elite sport, the slightest shift in the wind can have an enormous effect, I think that's essentially what you're describing in terms of how that played out over the 12 rounds and how that slower start by Triple G may well have set him up for the loss into the 12th round.
Yeah. Layman, I know you have to go, so why don't you give us your final thoughts and tell everybody where they can find you on social media and any other thoughts, especially during this hurricane season down in North Carolina, where we've already seen the loss of 16 lives.
Well, as always, JK, I want to say thank you, man, for having me on the show. It's always a great honor to come on here, man, because you are truly a voice for boxing. You're a spirit and a soul for boxing. And I just love that I'm able to just be me, you know, not be phony and just talk, you know, like real people do, especially about the sport that we love. With that being said, I want to say, Ms. Melissa, you know, I've never ever wanted to interview anybody in my life. I've never even crossed my mind. But I would love to, I want to interview you because I'm so impressed by everything that you said. And yeah, you're a woman. And coming from a woman, it's like, wow, this is somebody special. So please don't take that the wrong way. But I really, you have a fan forever now in Lehman Brewster. I mean, I really love everything that you had to say, your perspectives and just your views and the angles and just, wow, I'm impressed with you. I just want to let you know that. So with that being said, I'm Relentless Lehman Brewster. I have my programs, Brewster's Place, and what I'm trying to do is reach all of the people in every state in the United States. For now, I want to go bigger. All the champions, I want them to join Brewster's Place and do what I'm doing in my city, but do it under your name through Brewster's Place, because Brewster's Place is like the movie. It represented a community, and that's what we are. We are a community, and we stick together. And I have brothers that I came up in a boxing gym with when I was 10 years old. If I see them tomorrow, it'll be like, that connection is there, and they're always going to have my back, and I'm always going to have their back. And so what Brewster's Place is, it's a community, because we all love one another and respect one another because we know how hard it is to get in this ring, and we know the ups and downs. And who better to teach the world to teach these youth than us, because the majority of us come from where these kids came from. But if we make a united front and work together as men should be, because God said in the Bible, I want leaders. And, yeah, he says that. So I'm only saying that. Like, I'm asking people to join Brewster's Place and be leaders to help our community. The community is this country. The community is anybody that you see when you open your eyes. And so we can help direct that path if we work together as men and women. Because just as much as the men need guidance, because there are not a lot of fathers around, because most of them got to work too much or they absent in the home, we got the women that are the same way. So I'm looking for leaders. So I'm asking people to go to www.brewsters.place and just get in touch with me. Everybody, you ain't got to be no champion. I mean, you just got to want to be a leader and take responsibility for your actions so the other people can try to follow in your shoes. So that's what Lehman Brewster is all about at the end of the day. So with that, you can follow me at Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm Relentless Lehman Brewster, your neighborhood Spider-Man.
All right, champ. Thank you so much, man. And go ahead and celebrate your day, man, with the missus. Many more to you.
Yes, sir. God bless.
Well, okay. I think, Professor, you had something that you wanted to say just before we talked to Lane?
Yeah. You know, since we have the Miss Professor over there of women's boxing this week, we did have a women's champion get a belt, and she can fill us in on that, because I was watching the fight by mistake. I was doing something else and ran up on the fight and was like, oh, wow. And it was nothing but action, and the young lady won her belt. So I'll throw up to Melissa if you got to saw that fight.
Well, yeah, we're talking about Amanda Serrano, who is the, to our knowledge, the.
I think I disconnected. I think that was my fault there. Hold on. She was talking about the fight last week, actually, when she was talking about Serrano, but you were talking about Fran Chan. And,
right. It was. I think it was on ESPN.
Yeah. Fran Chan has actually been on the show, but at the time that she was on the show, she hadn't been trained by Barry Hunter. And I was kind of surprised to see her and her husband have now moved from D.C. because I believe they were originally from the Detroit area, if I'm not wrong here. But I'm
Hi.
Sure Melissa will mutter. Yeah, Melissa, we were actually talking about Fran Chan's fight.
Oh, you were talking about Fran Chan Cruz. Oh, that's
yeah.
I thought
yeah.
you were talking about Amanda Serrano. Oh my God, Fran Chan
no.
Cruz was crazy, brilliant,
yes.
great
yes.
on ES-
yes.
ESPN.
Yes.
She fought for the super middleweight because we had also just parenthetically, folks. JK and I had talked about wanting to discuss Amanda Serrano. Fran Chan Cruz, super middleweight fighter, only in her fifth professional fight. But you have to understand, she has been an elite fighter with USA Boxing. She has fought all over the world. The only reason she, as she says, she didn't get to the Olympics is because Clarissa Shields got in ahead of her and kind of, as she says, snuck in at 17 and took it away, and snatched it away from her. But she's in a really strong, fierce fighter. She had her pro debut against Clarissa Shields and acquitted herself really well. But in this fight, she was being brought in as like the opponent on a Golden Boy Promotions fight on ESPN, which was crazy brilliant, for the WBC super middleweight title. And so it was a 10-round fight, and as I said, on ESPN, which was just great because ESPN, along with Showtime, have been really the only two networks that have bothered to really actively support women's boxing on their boxing programming. So that was very exciting. That's just a little plug for those two guys, those two groups, because they have really been trying to support women. Anyway, she came in to fight against Marciela Cornejo, who fights out of California and has had some success in the sport. And really, Golden Boy figured, well, she'd be an opponent and Marciela would win. But Franchon was not playing, and she came in, and from the first round to the 10th, never stopped moving forward, never stopped punching. She just fought end-to-end like a true warrior. And, you know, she has a way to go as a professional in terms of refining her game, but she used jabs. She used her overhand right really effectively. She went to the body. She commanded the ring. And I have to say, she really took the heart away from Marciela Cornejo, who by the end of the fight looked like she was just going to collapse either from exhaustion or just the sheer shock of having someone really bring it to her. Because, frankly, she had never had that caliber of opponent before. And obviously, she and her team had not really done their homework on who Fran Chan Cruz was, because they were not prepared for someone to come in and fight in an unrelenting way from beginning to end. It was probably not the prettiest fight you've ever seen, but I'm telling you, Franchon Cruz brought it. And in terms of the women's boxing community, there was not a person that was not cheering her on, cheering on both of these women for representing women's boxing so beautifully on ESPN. And beyond that, Franchon Cruz is just this beautiful, wonderful person, and the support she's had from the boxing community. And, you know, the champ, Relentless Brewster, was talking about community as part of boxing, and for women in particular, it's really what keeps them going, because Lord knows they don't get any money. And I doubt, I can't imagine how little money Franchon Cruz got for that fight. But she was there to represent a sport that she loves, a sport that she wants to continue to grow in, and she did a great job of showing what the power of women in the ring can be all about.
Now, I have to ask this, because I remember having Franchon on the show, and at that time, she had a different trainer. Isn't Barry Hunter a new addition?
Yes, it is.
Yes,
absolutely. She and her husband have kind of she's, you know, hasn't been married all that long. He's also a boxer, and she doesn't have management right now. She just, you know, she's basically taken boxing into her own hands. She had some issues. She actually had quit the sport for a while and then came back into it, realizing, wait a minute, I can take control of this for myself. And she did. And it really has made a difference. And the fact that she had the opportunity even to be just an opponent in that fight was wonderful and well, well deserved.
Now, you also, like you said, we talked about it, but no one really got a chance to see it unless they went on YouTube or somewhere. Amanda Serrano, she earned her own respect. She matched the record, that was held only by Manny Pacquiao and Floyd?
Yeah, I mean, she's won, and Oscar De La Hoya, she's won six belts, six titles now. You know, she's put that out, and there's been a lot of press on it, and then there's been, you know, a lot of snark about it, where folks go, wow, well, how many rounds did she win versus, you know, versus De La Hoya and Pacquiao? And, you know, at this point, because of the problems in women's boxing, because of the lack of respect and the lack of opportunity for women's boxers, women in the sport, it's not a fair comparison to look at the number of rounds fought to get to winning six belts, because it's not an equivalent sport yet. It will be, but it is not, because of such things as not allowing women to fight three-minute round fights or 12-round championship battles rather than 10 rounds. So there are deficits, but it does not take away from the fact that this is a woman who has gone up and down the ladder on six different weight classes to fight and in the center of the ring and taken on. And when she fought 2 weeks ago, and as you say, it was a Showtime fight, but it was not on their main card, which, you know, as much as I'm touting Showtime to say, you know, kudos for putting women's boxing on, it really should have been on the main card rather than on YouTube in the prelims. But that having been said, at least one could watch it live, and it is available to watch again. And it was a hard, tough fight that she fought, and against an Argentine fighter who had some mad skills, was a bigger girl, and you know, was in that weight class of 140, so, and had come down to fight at that weight. So she really pushed Amanda around in the ring, and Amanda, you know, this was no cakewalk. She really had to fight very hard to win that belt. And but, you know, as I said, she's 29 years old. Her sister, Cindy Serrano, is, in my opinion, an even better fighter. And she will be fighting Katie Taylor next month in Boston on DAZN, on one of their first fights to be broadcast. So it's kind of an interesting family. But Amanda has been very frustrated by the kind of opportunities that she's had in boxing. You know, even though she's got great promoters and she's working with DiBella Entertainment, and Lou DiBella has really been pushing for equity for women in boxing. But even with all of that, she has not been able to command the kind of money that she would absolutely be commanding if she were a man fighting, with her kind of pedigree and the number of belts that she has and so on. So she's also one of these female fighters that is looking at MMA, and actually her next contest will be in MMA, I think at 125 pounds, so she's coming back down the ladder for that. And she might fight at 115 for her seventh belt, or if she can make a match with Cecilia Brakus, she'll come up to 147. So we'll see how all that'll play out and what the timing on all of that'll be.
And are we going to see Ms. Barrios back in the ring also?
See whom?
Mario's sister, Barrios. What's her first name?
Not sure I know who you mean.
Her brother's Mario Barrios.
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm not sure when, if there's a fight coming up. The big fights I know that are coming up is Heather Hardy, Shalito Vincent 2 fight. That's coming up in October. That's going to be huge. Although, you know, it's on a card with Danny Jacobs at Madison Square Garden. But HBO isn't going to carry it, which is really, really kind of shameful. Because the first fight was the first female fight that PBC ever ran and had huge ratings and just was really the female fight of the year in 2016. This rematch has been a long time in coming. It's something really exciting for both fighters. And disappointing that HBO has refused to put it on the air on their card. There will be an opportunity to watch the fight streamed. Not exactly sure of the details yet, but from what I've heard, it will probably be for free. Just do not know exactly how that will be available, whether it's something that will be on YouTube or FaceTime to watch. But it will be live streamed. It just will not be part of the normal HBO programming, which, again, is terribly unfortunate, because this is an opportunity. Both of these women are really popular, and their grudge match has been kind of legendary in sort of boxing and even in MMA circles, because when Heather fought in MMA, Shalito Vincent was calling her out at the MMA fight. So there's been a lot of publicity around the two of them. So this will be an exciting matchup and a title fight for a WBC title. So that's exciting. That's coming up. As I had mentioned, Katie Taylor, the great Irish Olympian, is going to be fighting in Boston against Cindy Serrano. That'll be a very tough, very exciting match at the lightweight division. And then, you know, we've had Michaela Mayer has been making a lot of noise. She actually fought on ESPN on a Top Rank card for the first time. She had always been on the ESPN 3 on their online version, but her last fight, she represented women in the sport beautifully, again, on ESPN. And just, I think... a lot of folks who watched that fight were really impressed with her skills. She had a beautiful use of the ring and a lot of different types of punches, a lot of different looks, and just really crisp, beautiful execution. So with fighters like these representing women in the ring, I think we're going to see more and more opportunity for hopefully for televised fights over the coming year. And, of course, Clarissa Shields and Christina Hammer will be fighting to unify the women's middleweight titles in November. More to come on that, but that will be a very exciting fight. Not entirely sure where on Showtime there will be. That'll be, you know, as you recall, Clarissa's been fighting on their, you know, their sort of up and coming bunch of fighting shows. But I believe that the Hammer Shields fight will be a co-main event on the regular Showtime boxing rather than Boxing After Dark. So, again, as I said, more to come on that. I don't have a date yet, but it's sometime in November and should be a pretty exciting fight because both of them bring a lot of skills, and we'll see how that all plays out.
Jabron?
I was thinking about the fight last night, and I feel like HBO kind of dropped the ball far as taking advantage of the opportunity to possibly promote women's boxing. If you notice, before the main event, it was about 45 minutes of just basically dead air, and you know they had female cards that fought, but it wasn't televised. Yesterday they could have actually played that during that time when they was trying to buy time in between bringing out the main event.
I got to tell you, Jabron, I'm with you. I do not understand. I really do not. There are some damn good fighters out there, and they work hard, and they want it, and they're hungry, and it's cheap right now. You know, I just don't get it. I really don't. I mean, I appreciate that ESPN is back to showing women on their fights. I appreciate that Showtime has been doing that. I really have. It's only been like the last 2 years, but you know, just to remind everybody listening, this isn't new. Women were regularly on ESPN 12 years ago. You know, 15 years ago, it was a regular thing, and now it's like some magical, strange apparition from Mars when there's females on a fight card. But women have been fighting for years, and they were on television for a very long time, and then the bottom dropped out, I guess, probably around the time that Leila Ali, more or less to coincide when Leila Ali retired from the sport. Women just disappeared from the screen. And now it is time to bring them back. And this new generation of fighters, which is a mixture of women who have continued to contest as professionals, but more to the point, these women who have fought since childhood and have become excellent amateur fighters and now have crossed into the professional ranks. And these women know how to fight. When you're watching someone like Marlena Sparsa, who is on a break right now but is going to be coming back in the spring to fight professionally again, as she said the other night when she was speaking on ESPN during the Franchon Cruz fight, she said, "I've been fighting for 17 years." You know, she was 10 years old, 11 years old when she first stepped into a boxing ring. So that's like any guy who started fighting as a kid. Clarissa Shields was 11 years old when she started fighting. Katie Taylor was a teenager when she started fighting. These women have been fighting for a long time. They have skills, and they deserve. And beyond that, they have a fan base that's rabid and loves watching them fight. And the fact that networks like HBO don't get it and don't understand what vitality that brings to the sport, and new fans that come in because of they want to follow these fabulous female fighters. They just don't get it, and I find it short-sighted, really, you know, lacking any kind of forethought of where the sport of boxing is going, how much MMA has been making inroads into the fan base, and the fact that having women on these fight cards makes it very exciting, and the opportunity is there to really inject new interest in the sport. That certainly has been shown by how popular female MMA fighters have come, and how important they've come to the bottom line of these promotional operations. And I got to tell you, a fighter like Heather Hardy is saying, "Hey, I'm leaving boxing because I can't make money in boxing." She made more money in one MMA fight than 3 or 4 boxing matches all together. So it doesn't make any sense to me. And the lack of sort of leadership and the lack of anything cohesive also stops these women and stops the momentum of the sport in its tracks, because you can never know where you're going to see it, when you're going to see it, how you're going to see it, and it's very hard to be a fan trying to watch out for a fighter unless you're just like in their hometown. So someone who wants to follow Heather Hardy, you kind of have to be in and around New York right now if you ever want to see her, because Lord knows you're not going to see her on television.
Well, before we get out of here, Melissa, we have a fight coming up this weekend, headlining on DAZN, making their debut in the United States. Anthony Joshua versus Alexander Povetkin. Just get your thoughts on the fight and who you think will come out victorious. And will you be signing up for the free trial for DAZN app?
The answer is yes, absolutely. I will be signing up for the free app, and because I know that they already know that they are committed to having excellent female fights on DAZN, and as long as they're doing that, I will support what they're going to do. In terms of the Anthony Joshua fight, I'm hoping it goes to him. I want to see him grow as a fighter, and so I'm going to throw my hat in and say, yeah, I think Anthony Joshua will have the opportunity to win this fight and continue to grow as a fighter, and we'll see where he goes.
I want to ask both of you about another fight that took place this week. Didn't get a whole lot of publicity, but I thought it was a pretty good fight. For as long as it lasted, because I think I want to see this kid a little bit more. And that's about, I'm talking about Mr. Montague. What did you think about his performance, Melissa?
I didn't see the fight, so I'm sorry, I can't really opine.
Are you familiar with him at all?
Not really. I didn't see the fight, and I haven't really followed him as a fighter, so you'll have to educate me, and I'll definitely look for him on the next time.
Did you happen to see his performance, DeBron?
Yeah, you know, he came in as he always do, you know, being aggressive, being strong. And Melissa, he's the gentleman that knocked out Saddam Ali for his belt.
Okay, then I know who you mean. Okay. Yeah.
So he was on the undercard of the the Canelo Triple G fight last night.
Right, right. I turned away from that one. Didn't see it.
So, are there anything else that we should touch on tonight, Professor, before we get out of here?
That's just about it. Just last update, the rematch with Kovalev and Alvarez has been picked up by ESPN, and
oh, cool.
They've done a deal with Top Rank and ESPN. So, they will be announcing the date real soon. So the rematch is on.
Cool. And the only thing I'd say is David Lemieux, you know, lives to fight another day. That was a beautiful left hook. That was something.
You know, I think Lemieux is kind of in a very interesting spot because, I mean, we all see his power, and we all know how he is against most opposition. But when it comes to the championship rounds, it seems he always only has that puncher's chance. Do you think that you know, maybe with him, you know, he needs to maybe settle down a little bit more, box a little bit more, rather than think of himself as just a power puncher? Because he's very crowd-friendly.
Yeah, you know, there was, you know, because I watched it again before I went on with you, because I would, and, you know, there was a point where he got hit with a jab that really knocked him back. And then he came forward again and he threw a lot of punches in that first round and then just got lucky, you know, basically he was trading and he took a jab. He was able to pull back, but as he was pulling back from the jab, he threw his hook and you know, knocked the guy out. But, I guess it's kind of the same thing, and maybe Bernard Hopkins really showed the way. As you get older, you have to adjust and go on something other than sheer power. You have to finesse the game and develop other skills. And if he wants to really survive in the sport and have a chance for another championship or just, hang in as a really excellent contender rather than as an opponent, he'll have to mix up his game and get more finesse.
Any thoughts on that, Jabron?
Yeah, I mean, I just think De La Hoya has him around in his back pocket, you know, for a possible opponent for Canelo. You know, if they don't find another, like, big money fight, if they don't go the Triple G rematch route, you know, that's why he had him on the undercard, to make him look good. So
yeah.
The last thing that people could remember is, yeah, man, Lemieux, he still got it. He got that power. He knocked that guy out. So he'll be marketable just in case. If they throw him in there with Canelo, because they, you know, as they always say, maybe he'll have a fight in December or January, you know, but we all know he's not going to fight until May.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, thank everyone for their time tonight, as usual. Melissa, thank you for taking this Sunday night and giving us some time. I'll make sure that the champs get your information.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
No problem. Why don't you give us your final thoughts for the evening and tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Sure. On social media, on Instagram and on Twitter, I'm Girl Boxing Now. On Facebook, I'm Girl Boxing. I'm the author of A History of Women's Boxing, which is available on Amazon. I'm waiting for a date for I have written a chapter on a new book on women's boxing. I don't have a date yet, but as soon as I know its availability, I'll let everybody know. I've written a chapter about a pioneer boxer from the 1970s named Lady Tiger Tremier, who was quite an amazing force in the sport, including not only being a pioneer among the first women to fight professionally, legally in the United States, but also politically. Most impressively, when she went on a hunger strike for a month to fight for equity for women in boxing in the 1980s. So I'm really very proud of that work, and I will keep you posted when the book comes out. And otherwise, I thank you, JK, and Professor, for putting up with me yet another week, and look forward to speaking to you both soon.
All right. You have a great night.
Thanks.
You so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye. Jabron, we're going to have you very well known around the boxing circles very soon. Why don't you give us your final thoughts for the evening, and tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Well, thank you, JK, and thank the champ and Scully and Melissa for coming in tonight and sharing your thoughts and knowledge. We had another great weekend of boxing. Can't wait to this upcoming week for Joshua to see this outcome. I'm actually looking forward to a competitive fight. Believe it or not, Povetkin is an Olympian, former champion. So, hey, can't wait. Tune in. So I'm Jabron Clemens. You can find me on Facebook. That's JABRANCLEMON. Let them know where they can find you at, JK.
Well, you can always find me on Facebook at the Pugilist Corner. We're also on the web at www.thepugilistcorner. That's PUGILISTKORNER. You can always catch us there. Broadcast of the Weekend Wrap, as well as our Tuesday show, The Dog Pound with K9 Boxing. So we look forward to talking to you next week right here on the Weekend Wrap. Have a great weekend, everyone, a great work week, and looking forward to talking to you again next Sunday.